Oh, okay. Pam's going to start us out. Thank you.
Thank you, all my peoples, and I'm glad to see every one of you. Okay, Pam F. Hi. Thank you. Thank you. Is it not? Okay, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Okay. I'm a compulsive overeater and a sugar addict, refined carb addict. By my higher power's grace and working this program fully, I've been imperfectly abstinent since May 1, 2019, one day at a time. I've been maintaining a healthy body weight and 110-pound weight loss from my high weight since then for more than 5 years. And I'd like to share my experience, strength, and hope in kind of a general way, what it's like, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So desperation. Coming into the program in 2003, I was desperate, a real, I was terrified, really. I was at my top weight, which is like 260, 65. And things hurt. My hips hurt. I had trouble sleeping. Things hurt. I was scared. I was having heart palpitations. I was just really scared. My dad had died the year before, and I just had a really rough time. I think he was, I love my dad a lot, but I think he was my little G God. And when he passed away, I really felt rudderless and, weight increased. And I until I was just absolutely at my wit's end, how am I going to stop this? I can't seem to stop this, and I've tried all the different diet programs and all of that. Anyway, so there I am at OA and my first meeting. Boy, did I feel that I was home, that I was where I needed to be. I was in the right place. I don't know home yet quite, but it was, I knew I was in a safe and a good and right place. Everybody I heard, they were so welcoming, and smiles greeted me. They were having fun at their meeting, and all the shares and stuff I resonated with, I leaked, cried almost the whole first meeting, and I was also really pissed. I was relieved and I was really angry. I think relieved because, oh my God, I feel some hope, and angry because inside I somehow knew my way wasn't going to work. Although I still hung on to it for years. Okay. So years of trying to make it work my way, pick and choose tools that I might be willing to use for a little while, and in and out of relapse. My food plan was a higher power. Diet with group support, still wanting to eat what I wanted, trying to figure out, ooh, if I change this or I just do this or whatever, I can still have what I want. I lost down to a goal weight, what, 10, 12 years ago, but I had not, I've refused to work the steps, to discipline myself to do that daily work, the daily inventory, a daily prayer time, a daily quiet time. I just refused to do all of that stuff. I didn't really want to change inside. I didn't really want to look at myself with a goal of changing. I still wanted to eat what I wanted. So I lost down that gale weight. And I said, I've said many times I was there like one day. And I had to start putting it back on. And I did put almost all of it back on. So some of the costs included health costs. I have diabetes. It's in a well support. I am not taking medication for it any longer. And I was well controlled with diet and exercise thanks to working my program fully, since working the steps every single day and using all the tools every day since May 1 of 2019. I've had two hip replacements. I wore them out, poor things. And I recently have had developed some a little bit of heart issue, not too bad, but do I know if that would have happened without the overeating? I don't know, but it just is what it is today. So far, that's minor, and I'm grateful. So in 2019, what happened? Something, I found out I had diabetes, and my A1C was 11.3. It was, my doctor said, if you keep doing this, you're going to fall over. You're not going to survive that if you keep doing what you're doing. I still, for several months, was twiddling around. I asked my doctor to give me you know, or she wanted me to take several medications, you know, big time medication. And I asked her, I'm afraid to take all of these. I'm in this program and I haven't been working it fully. I know if I do, I will take this weight off. And can I just start with one? And she allowed me to do that. I told her about OA. And anyway, so I'm still with her. She didn't fire me, which is a fortunate. And but I still hesitated. You know, I death was knocking, you know, I've how many times, what is it going to take? So I'm at a conference. I'm at a convention. I'm at a convention with my sponsor. I went to two of them in April 2019 with my sponsor at her invitation. And both of them were, the message was, recovery is in working the steps. The tools are here to help us work the steps. That's what I heard. That I don't know, but that second one, that speaker, that was his message. Verbatim was, the recovery is in working the steps. The tools are here to help us work the steps. Anyway, I happened to sit down and have breakfast with him that morning, Saturday morning, I believe, and I was in my favorite place in the whole world, a hotel with a breakfast buffet. And I had just been to the buffet and I thought, well, I'll sit down and talk with this guy. And OA, you know, anyway, I'd seen his face. So I proceeded to tell him how I realize I have diabetes. I found out I have diabetes and I'm working on it. I still need to lose, however many dozens of pounds. And he, you know, he didn't know me. And I know he wasn't trying to be mean, although it felt it at the moment. But as I was telling him this, when I stopped to breathe, he said, "Why, if I knew it was making me ill and going to kill me, would I have this and this and this and this on my plate? Why would I do that to myself?" Why, well, my mouth hanging open like that, and I was shocked, and it still raises the hair on the back of my neck when I say that, because it hurt my feelings. But I don't think he meant to hurt my feelings. He just didn't have anything to lose. He wasn't interested in BS. And what that did, because I was glaring at him all day long as he was a speaker all day long. And he was doing workshops. I don't know why he spoke. I remember thinking, I can't believe he can stand up there and keep talking for that long. I wouldn't be able to do that. But I listened. It punctured my BS balloon that kept saying, I'll be able to make it work my way. I'll be able to do this myself. It punctured that, and I got it. That day, I got it. I went home from that convention, and the next day I had set up a place in my room where I could shut the door and be uninterrupted, and I started working the steps, having a morning time every day. I've done it every day since, with my higher power's help and the help of the fellowship. So that's what happened. That was a spiritual awakening, a big one. That was the one, the critical one, that helped me start working the steps and be abstinent. I've had a lot of other smaller spiritual awakenings, or I don't know if something's small or not. But it clicked. Okay, so I became to work, willing to work all the steps, all of them every day, one day at a time. Went on my first vacation at some point without, because that had been the last big relapse I had, was when I was absent for a while and decided, oh, I can't go on vacation. How can I go on vacation? 1 minute? Wow, that was fast. Oh, okay, thanks. That's better. And but I went on my first vacation abstinent. The thing on the pillow didn't, I didn't touch it. I took my stuff and I did my journaling. I did my quiet time. I did my prayers. I did all of that right there on the hotel floor and my knees on the floor and by the bed, and did my normal thing. I took my thing with me, and I took a little tablet so I could send my food and send my writing and stuff to my sponsor. And it was fine. I had a great vacation and I didn't feel gypped in any way. First time I went through steps 6 and 7. That's what we're here about really today, is digging into 6 and 7. The first time I went through it, I read the literature. You know, I read the thing in the books. We talked about it. I talked about it with my sponsor. I surrendered the best I could right then. And since then, I've gone through 6 and 7 and all the steps several times. Each time learning more, I went through, I've learned it's a lifetime process. It's a lifetime process, and I'm making progress. I'm never going to be zapped, fixed like I wanted to be early on. I wanted my higher power to just fix me so I can go on do my way. And that was not ever going to happen. Not is not ever going to happen. I need my higher power every day. So daily surrenders is something I read a while back, or some came to me a while back. It was something I found that really made a difference for me, because daily surrendering, every day I'm surrendering all I understand of my character defects to all I understand of my higher power. And I need to do that every single day, because if I just surrendered once, months go by, I drift. Every day I'm like, I do my inventory, you know, I do my inventory every day, and then I'm revisiting my character defects. I'm writing about them, all that. And I resurrender them. So doing this, using being abstinent, allowed me to go through COVID along with everybody else, and through my brother's death in 2021, retirement at the end of 23. Change, big life change, a good one, big life change, and a lot of stress with my mom's health early half of last year. And I've not had to eat over any of it. Whatever's been going on, I've not been had to overeat over it. I'm staying within my health plan, or my food plan. So this year I realized a need to focus more on and dig into step 6 and 7. To me, 6 and 7 are about what's blocking me from my higher power, from myself, my own feelings. If I'm having trouble feeling free, you know, feeling free, feeling open in my own skin, if I'm feeling a resistance, what is it? What's blocking me? So that, to me, that's what 6 and 7 are about. And mine was fear of intimate relationships. Particularly with men, that's been a core fear of mine. And earlier this year, my higher power said, it's time for you to dig into that. This is the big rock in my path. And still, so that's what I'm digging into. And when I surrendered, became willing to do that digging, all of a sudden I got all this resource, all this resource. I did the F10 program. That our Oklahoma City Inner Group offers, which is wonderful. 10 days. I just, not that I was new, but refresher. Hey, it was great. It helped me kind of go through things again, get another kind of resettle my foundation of things, my program. And I did a 15 week step workshop that our Inner Group offers. It was wonderful. Helped me do another deep step 4, which I needed, and a 5 and a 6. I've two different books came my way, that neither of which is OA approved. So I can't tell you the names of them right now. I can't share that right now. But both of them have been very meaningful for me, and I'm reading them with other OA fellows, and that's helpful. That really helps me. Some, you know, I like the back and forth and us discussing it. It helps me take it in more. Okay. I need to move forward. So what's it like now? I'm feeling progress with that. One minute. I'm working a rigorous program each day, including the steps and using all the tools the best I can. I plan my food ahead. I use a phone app. I weigh and measure most of my food. I have a calorie boundary and a carb boundary because I have diabetes. So I have to keep my carbs low to help me keep diabetes well controlled without medicine. Boundaries that I was terrified of, didn't want any boundaries. They are now my friends. Boundaries have become my friends. I'm staying pretty consistently connected with my higher power and my own feelings. To do that requires me to work that program fully every day and staying in today, right now. Past is a memory. It's a good for understanding education, but I don't want to dwell there. And to me, there it is no future. Yes, I need to plan ahead for this and that. But if I'm in the future, usually when I feel fear, usually I've crossed over into future fear, fear and a future. And there's nothing there. It's not real yet. Okay. So I have real trusting and growing friendships. My relationship with my immediate family has improved. I'm not in a romantic relationship now, but I'm more available than I've ever been. And I am using step 6 and 7 in particular to focus on my character defect of codependency. I've had more spiritual awakenings every now and then, bigger little light bulbs that my higher power has given me as I've become ready. And I have programmed now to help me live a full, open, honest, healthy, and full life to and hope for continuing growth. I'm so grateful to my higher power and to all of you. This fellowship saved my life. Love y'all.
My turn. I'm Peggy, compulsive overeater, and I'm very, very nervous, so bear with me. Okay, so I didn't grow up a compulsive eater. I had other compulsions, but I didn't start putting on weight basically until I was in my late 20s. I started eating instead of doing other bad habits that I was giving up. I became very good at gaining weight to a certain point and then losing it all and then getting more weight and losing it all. I did that cycle maybe 5 times in my life until I was over 100 pounds overweight. When I joined OA, I was desperate for an answer to this cycle because every time I lost weight, I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. My life didn't improve. It was just a skinnier version of the same person that was loaded with shame, loaded with regrets. I have to look at my notes. I was self-loathing. I was immobilized, or I wrote down stymied because I didn't feel like I could, like I had a voice. Like I would get so uncomfortable talking to other people that I would forget in the middle of a sentence what I wanted to say. I didn't know where to put my arms. I didn't know how to stand. I was completely isolated. And every time I lost the weight, I was the same person. So I joined OA, worked the steps with my sponsor. I actually have 2 lovely sponsors that help me every day. We got to steps 4 and 5 and started working on identifying what my defects are. Kept an ongoing list of my resentments and things I had to make amends for. And also the character defects, which over time have grown and changed as I've grown and changed. So let's see. With step 6, I had to go through a mental checklist, basically, if I was ready to give my defects to my higher power. So, I mean, do I really trust my higher power enough to take these things away from me? Am I honest with myself, my sponsor, my higher power about wanting to be rid of my defects? What would my life be like without them? How would it change? Am I ready for that? Do I secretly enjoy any of my defects, like gossip, for example? I used to, and still sometimes fall into that bit of thrill out of the superiority I would feel in gossip. So am I ready? And then with step 7, okay, so step 6 is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So am I ready? Step 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. So I started with the 7-step prayer from the big book. My creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. Praying that every day. And then I have a list of all my defects and what I want instead. So I have this list. For example, procrastination has always been a big one. I used to call it sloth, but my sponsor is so gentle with me. She said, no, don't call it sloth. So I say, Lord, please remove from me procrastination and give me instead determination and motivation. Gossip, take away the gossip from me and give me kind words and a giving heart. Fear was a big one that I still live with. I'm terrified right now. So fear, give me courage and trust in my higher power, you God. Selflessness and self-centeredness, I think we all tend to stay there sometimes in our defects, in our disease. I ask daily to make me selfless and compassionate. Shame has always been something that has enveloped me. So I've asked for self-esteem and humility. I don't want to build myself up to where I'm arrogant. I just want to feel comfortable with other people and myself. And then perfectionism is another one that goes along with procrastination and or shame. If I can't do it perfectly, there's something terribly wrong with me. I'm not worthy. And so I don't even do it. I don't even try. So I've asked that my higher power give me acceptance. And so that goes on. The last one I added to my list just recently, when I had a day where I was tempted to relapse. I was super tired. I worked too many hours that week. I didn't eat well or enough that day. I worked overtime. I had a meeting. I wanted to go home and I wanted pasta very badly. And I went in my cupboard, and I don't eat really carbs right now very much, except for beans and fruit. But I wanted pasta, my old comfort food. And I got in my cupboard and I looked at the label and I read the ingredients. I'm like, nope, I can't eat that, or I won't eat that. I choose not to. And then I put it back in and I picked it back up again and I put it back in. And I did this about four different times. And I don't know why it's in my cupboard, but it was. I closed the door. I made myself an abstinent meal, wrote a letter to my sponsors, and did okay. But I realized that that is a defect of spiritual amnesia. I forgot all about higher power until the next day. It's like, wow, why didn't I even think? So I relied purely on myself. I'm sure my higher power was there guiding me because I did choose abstinence. But so I pray now for spiritual attentiveness and remembrance of my higher power in times of need, not just times when I want something. So since working the steps, I've lost approximately, I'm like this far from my goal. I'm at 99.2 pounds today. So thank you. And my original goal has been 100-pound weight loss. And then I'm going to live with that for a while and reassess later and see if I need to lose any more. If not, I'll accept where I am. But this time, working the program, losing the weight, I feel so much different. I feel like a new person. I go to a meeting at work and I actually think of things to say and say it in front of everybody else. That's not me. I've never done that. I've never felt, I work with all men. I'm the only woman in the room and I don't have a voice. And nowadays I'm just saying whatever I think I need to say. And that is something from working the steps. That is a gift from my higher power that has changed me since working steps 6 and 7. Procrastination. I've always had a problem with housework. I'll work hard at work. I work my butt off. I do a good job. I'm known for that. I get home and I look at the dirty dishes in the sink and I was like, oh, I can't do that. I'll do that tomorrow. Now I go home and I'll turn on the TV like I tend to do. And it's like, you know what? I don't want to watch this. I think I'm going to go do the dishes. And that's, again, that's not for me. That is inspiration from my higher power after working these steps and being changed by them. I do shy away from gossip. I don't like talking about other people nowadays. It still happens sometimes, but I'm still praying about that one. I used to be afraid of driving down the road. I got rear-ended 3 times in about a year and a half. None of it was my fault. So I'd see cars flying up behind me and I would just freak out. Nowadays, I drive wherever I want to without the fear. I'm still a little afraid of public speaking, but I'm not terrified out of my mind. I've become much more confident in myself. The shame is going away. I feel different this time. without being arrogant and puffed up. I feel like God has changed me. You people have changed me. OA has changed me in a better way. And again, spiritual amnesia is on my list fairly new, and I don't want to have that situation again where I'm tempted to relapse and I forget about God. I think I'm done though. Do we have anything else? How am I doing for time? 5 minutes. Oh goodness. Okay. Well, let me see. Perfectionism. All right. So I link this to shame. If I didn't do something perfectly, I would feel deep shame and unworthiness. I'm repeating myself. My new internal message is that I will do my best in whatever I'm trying to do and accept that. And my best sometimes is fall short and sometimes it's great. So let's see, selfishness and self-centeredness. In the time that I've been in OA, I've learned to get out of myself, stay away from isolation. I actually crave people now and don't stay by myself. And I get a joy out of serving others. It seems, that's a part of my steps as well, but it seems like when I can serve others, my life is better. And not from what something they're giving me, like praise or whatever. It's just, I feel an internal peace and love for the people I'm trying to help, or acceptance of myself. So thank you. I appreciate it.
It is rare that I'm the shortest person in the area. Thank you, ladies, for making me feel nice today. Where I work at a florist, and I'm like the tallest person. Literally everyone else is like 6 inches shorter than me. So they're like, Melanie, can you reach this? Let me get this. So it's kind of nice. So I'm Melanie, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I first came into OA in 2007. But I've been a compulsive overeater for as long as I can remember. And I come from a family of addicts. My dad's dad was a very active alcoholic, very mean drunk, and did a lot of damage to my dad, both physical and emotional. And while my dad never drank, he passed on that emotional damage to my sister and I. When I was in fourth grade, I overheard the doctor talking about my weight. I weighed 135 pounds, and he referred to me as obese. That was the first time I'd ever heard that term. I didn't know what it meant, but I knew it wasn't good because he was talking to my parents without me. But he did say something that I found kind of prophetic. He said, because they were like, well, what can we do? How can we help her? And he said, she won't lose the weight until she wants to lose the weight. And I was like, okay. And in fourth grade, that didn't really mean a whole lot. But years later, I'm like, he's right. You know, I didn't lose weight until I was ready. I went through high school, kind of stayed basically the same, about 185 in high school. Went to college. For the first time, I could buy all my own food. I could eat whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And that just wasn't not a good place to be for a compulsive overeater. And instead of gaining the freshman 15, I gained the freshman 50. And so I ended up seeing a counselor while I was there, and she gave me hey, thank you. Okay, perfect. Nice. Okay. So in college, I'd received a cassette tape from a program that was very similar to OA, but not necessarily OA, and listened to that tape. And I was like, man, these people are crazy. I am not like that at all. And so I just kind of stuck it off to the side and didn't think anything about it again. Years go by. I find my husband. We fall in love. I cook for four people, even though there's two of us. And then we'd moved back home. We kind of moved around a little bit, moved back to my hometown. And my mom was killed in a farming accident suddenly. Very tragic, kind of ripped my family apart in a lot of ways. And we've never really recovered. Just put that out there. She was the glue of the family. And that was the first time where I saw my eating just go crazy. I couldn't stop. And it was 4 months of just cram it in, cram it in, cram it in. So I don't feel anything because that's what I wanted. I wanted to feel numb because all I felt was pain and grief and loss and anger and hate. And I did not enjoy that. In the end, we moved away from family for some reasons that are kind of insane. If you want details later, I'll tell you. But that's, you know, it is what it is. Grief messes people up. I'll say that. And we moved away to Little Rock, Arkansas, and me still eating constantly. You know, I thought getting away from the family would help. It didn't, because my grief came with me. And I remember sitting in the bathroom in the middle of the night one night, because that's where I kept my stash. It's underneath the bathroom sink, because my husband would never look there for food. And I'm sitting in the bathroom eating in the middle of the night, and I'm like, he really deserves somebody better than me. And that's the moment. I didn't come into OA for me. I came into OA for him because I thought he deserved better. And I thought, well, you know, we don't believe in divorce where I come from. So he's not going to be able to get a better wife. So I have to be the better wife in some way, shape, or form. So I remembered that tape from ages ago, looked that program up. There wasn't anything in the Little Rock area, but there was OA, and actually quite vibrant OA at the time. And so I went to a meeting. And like some of my fellows have shared, I sat in that meeting and I cried through the whole thing because these people did not sound crazy. They sounded just like me. And I thought, you mean I'm not the only one? So that time in program, got abstinent, stayed abstinent for about 3 years, lost just shy of 100 pounds, and was finally able to get pregnant with my oldest because we had struggled with infertility on and off. Had the baby, was abstinent through the pregnancy, actually lost weight during the pregnancy, which is unheard of. My doctors were like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm great. It's OA. And then they let me take the baby home. And I was not at all prepared for that. I was totally prepared to give birth to the baby, but the bringing the baby home part, I was like, where's the instruction booklet? Why did they just let us leave the hospital? What is wrong with them? Do they not know? We have no clue what we're doing. And my husband was traveling a lot at the time, so I didn't have a lot of home support with baby. And I let that get in the way of my OA. I got fired by one of my sponsors because I wasn't calling at the same time every single day because my baby was a baby. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I don't know what to do about that. Found a new sponsor, much more relaxed. But then I started manipulating things, right? And so was still solidly abstinent, but pushing the boundaries. And not too long after that, we moved to Minnesota and got involved with the HAL program up there and managed to maintain abstinence there. So we're, you know, going on about 4 years of abstinence. And then we moved to Dallas. We were only in Minnesota for 2 years. My husband's company kept getting bought and we kept shuffling around. So we moved to Texas. And in Texas, I was like, you know what? I'm kind of tired of going to OA. I was like, I always have to go to these meetings. It's such a drag. I could be home with my kids who are awesome. And so again, whatever excuses I could come up with. And I basically walked away from the program in Texas. We were there for 2 years and then moved up here to Oklahoma City. And I tried kind of getting back into the groove a little bit when we moved up here, but not hard. I'll just put that out there. I did not try really hard. And, you know, my husband was smart enough. He knows enough about program to know that if he tries to push me, I'm going to push right back. And so he was like, okay, whatever you need to do. And it was last August, not this past August, but the August before that, when I finally felt ready to come back. And came back into the doors and was almost immediately abstinent because I knew I needed to be here. Like, I knew what I had to do. I knew what, like, this whole time I knew what I needed to do. I just wasn't willing to do it. So walked back in the doors, got a sponsor, got abstinent, have maintained that abstinence since. So it's been a year and 2 months. Down about almost 80 pounds. So we're getting there. But this time it's very different. It's not about the food. And my food plan doesn't look like anybody else's food plan, which always freaks some people out because it's very loose. Like, I have a life that requires me to be very flexible in a lot of ways because my kids are in school, they have activities, I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. And I have ADHD really intensely, which makes planning really hard. And while I'm medicated, it does not erase that. And so my sponsor, who I love to death, gives me what I need and allows me a lot of freedom within my food plan. And I have worked much more closely with my higher power this time around because I have to. I don't have a food plan that's cut and dry and this, that, and the other that I have, you know, that I can rely on or that I can make my God. I have to rely on my higher power and that relationship with Him. And so every time anything goes in my mouth, I ask God for guidance. Is this something I can eat? And if it's not, I put it down and I walk away. And He has showed me what my body feels like when it's full. He has gifted me the complete desire to never eat anything with sugar in it again. And it kind of turns my stomach now. And that was nothing I had before. And it's very much for me a spiritual program. Like, there's the physical and emotional aspects of it. And I did a lot of that work in the first go round. And this time I had to do the spiritual work. And so for me, step 6 and 7, one of my favorite lines in the AA 12 and 12 is for step 6. It says, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. Right? Yeah. And it is. Like, the first time around, I did step 6 and 7, but I didn't like do step 6 and 7. You know, I was like, oh, I'm done. Okay, let's move on. This time I spent weeks and weeks in step 6 and 7. Really, really. Okay. What are all my defects? Let's list them out. What are those assets that reflect what I want to see in my life? Who do I want to be? How do I get there? How do I make these changes? And that has been such a big difference. And I love my sponsor for kind of seeing that that's where I was. And not being like, okay, you need to do this and this and this, all these kind of beginning OA things, because I had done those and I wasn't there anymore. I was ready to just like, let's do this for real this time. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the principles of step 6 and 7. I've spent a lot of time with those. And in a lot of ways, I consider those assets, right, as the opposite of my defect, because my defect tends to be, I don't want to. You can't make me. You guys are not like that at all, of course. I know. but step 6 says its principle is willingness. Well, I want something, but I'm not always willing to do what it takes to make that happen, right? I want to be happy, joyous, and free. I want to be free of the weight. I want to be able to eat in a way that feeds my body, my mind, and my soul. Am I willing to do the work for that? And up until last year, I wasn't. Now I know that willingness is something I have to work at every day. Like, there are days I get up and I'm really, really not willing to get out of bed right now. Give me 5 minutes and then I'll be willing. And so I kind of took that idea and said, you know, willingness is not a one and done thing. It's an every moment, every day, constant kind of, I have to check in and make sure I'm still willing. I have to be willing. And I can feel myself when I kind of push away from some of that. And I'm like, ooh, my willingness is slipping and I need to refocus on that. And the word within step 6 that gets me is that we have to be entirely ready. Entirely is a big word. It encompasses everything. I have to be willing to do whatever God tells me to do, to get rid of whatever God tells me to get rid of, even if I might like that thing, even if I think that thing's one of my best, qualities. And that's a scary idea, right? Who am I going to be after God gets done with me? And I don't know. I mean, I'll just be honest. I don't know. But I do know that God has my back, and God has an idea of who I am that is beautiful and wonderful and happy and joyous and free. And so I'm going to let him. I'm going to let him do it. I'm willing to let him do those things, and I'm going to do it scared, because it is a scary thing, you know? And as we've kind of moved through those steps and I've integrated all of this into my life, you know, I walked out of the doors of OA while my kids were little and walked back in. Now I have a teenager and a preteen, but OA never left me. Like, my kids know OA stuff because it gets in you. And you can't walk out and be like, yes, I'm going to go right back to being that clueless person who didn't know anything before. It's not like that. You will never enjoy a binge again, ever. You will be eating food and think, this is not as much fun as it used to be. And that's okay. I mean, that's the point, right? But so that entirely peace, being willingness, we want to kind of hang on to like the milder defects. Like maybe ambition at work. Well, ambition is a form of greed, and greed is not a good thing, right? So I pray that God brings me the things God needs me to have. If that means that I succeed in something, it's all God. It's not me. And if I don't succeed, that's okay too. That's what was needed in that moment. I tend to focus on what I call the big seven: pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, and sloth. I do use the word sloth. I hope that doesn't offend anybody. No, I'm kidding. Because to me, that's one of my biggest issues is sloth. Like, I just really want to be lazy all the time. I don't want to do the thing. I don't want to do the dishes. I don't want to do the laundry. I don't want to get up and make dinner. And yet I am a stay-at-home mom. So at some point I have to justify being a stay-at-home mom and do things, right? I don't know. So that's what I'm constantly working on. Like, Melanie, are you willing to get up and do the dishes right now? Okay. Will you be willing in 5 minutes? Yes. Okay. 5 minutes. We can do, like, it's this inner constant conversation that I have with myself. And it's okay to not be willing right this minute, but I can't ever like give in to the, I'm never doing it. You can't make me, kid. That's still from, you know, my childhood, where I was made to do a lot of things I did not want to do. Step seven's principle is humility. And this is kind of the foundation of everything. It's all the steps are kind of pivot on this idea of humility. And I struggle with both ends of humility, thinking either I am the most awesome person in the room or I am the crappiest person in the room. And there is no in between. So I have to right size myself and my relationship with myself and my understanding of who I am. I'm not the best person in the room. I will never be the best person in the room, but I will also never be the worst person in the room, because the reality is we are all doing our best with what we have. End of story. And I can't look at someone else and go, well, you know, they got into program before me, or they stuck around and they didn't leave. And if I could have that, none of that matters, because my story is mine. I had to do what I had to do in order to get where I am today. I had to relapse. I had to walk out. I had to come back. All of that had to happen for me to see what I needed to see to find real recovery. Sorry, I have notes on my phone and it's kind of hard to read. So this is what I think of when I think of a humble person, right? And it's really just having a realistic sense of yourself. So not overinflated, but not self-deprecating. I'm really bad about that. Self-deprecating humor is my bread and butter. God's going to take that away one day and I'm going to be like, I don't know what to do anymore. A humble person acknowledges both their strengths and their limitations. Because I do have strengths. I have things that I'm really good at. And it's okay to acknowledge those. It's not okay to be like, I am the best, most awesome person at this thing, because that's not true ever. There's going to be somebody in the world who's probably better than me. But I have to acknowledge my limitations too. And I've struggled with that. I grew up with a mom with a martyr complex. And I kind of brought that into my own family. And people will ask me things and I have a really hard time saying no. In spite of the fact that I'm a stay-at-home mom, I really don't have a lot of free time because I'm doing things. Like, I'm not just, there's no bonbons or soap operas in my life. I was lied to about this entire thing. So I have to acknowledge my limitations, right? I have to have the capacity to be honest and without pretense in relation to myself. So when I look at myself in the mirror, I want to be honest. I don't want to talk down to myself, but I want to be truthful about what I see, you know? And so I try to always balance. I trained to be a teacher and did that before I had kids. And one of the things we were always told was to do the it's the positive, negative, positive sandwich. So like if you have something bad to say, you say a positive thing, then you say the negative thing, and then you say the positive thing. So if I'm feeling bad about myself, I allow myself to say that out loud, but I have to come up with two other things that are positive. So I try to rebalance what's going on in my head, right? They don't have false pride, arrogance, or self-esteem. They're modest and without ego. They're authentic and real, can admit their vulnerability. Early on in OA, I heard a woman speak, and she said, my life is an open book. And that's how I try to live my life. Like, if you want to ask me a question, I'll tell you it all. I will not hold back. I'll tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'm not afraid to tell people I'm in OA. I'm not afraid to talk about my issues, whatever. It's just who I am these days, right? And the more honest and vulnerable I can be about that with more people, the safer my abstinence is. So this humility kind of bridges the gap between the willingness of step six and then the action of the rest of the steps, right? And it has to be a daily practice. And I love the seven-step prayer. You know, it talks about being willing that God should have all of us, good and bad, right? And removing from me every single defect of character which stands in the way. Because at the end of the day, my job is to be useful to my higher power and to be useful to you. And anything that gets in the way of that is going to get in the way of my abstinence. It's going to get in the way of my recovery. It's going to get in the way of everything. So I don't know, I guess that's all I have. Thanks.
That was awesome. All right. Any questions for these ladies? Who wants to be first?
I know, Donna, she's talking again. Yes, I'm Donna, compulsive overeater, flour and sugar addict. Oh, okay. Two of you guys, I know, really, you guys did an awesome job. And I know that talking about six and seven is very, very difficult, you know, because we're not perfect. And we want to be. I want to be. But what I do know about the two of you guys, I've seen before and after, and the main thing that you, all three of you guys talked about was the honesty. And for someone who is having a difficult time breaking in, like we deny ourselves and we deny being honest with ourselves. It's the most biggest thing that needs to be broken. How the heck does that work to be able to get to the point where you are, where before, honesty?
All right, who's brave?
I'm in.
Pam, I do my daily inventory. It's between me and my higher power. I send it to my sponsor, I don't expect my sponsor or anybody to read all that stuff, but I write it out, and there's something about putting it on paper, the pen with the pen, that is much more real, or it's harder for me to lie for somehow with the writing on the paper in my own journal than it is when it's coming out of my mouth or in my head. That's my answer.
Awesome. Do you want to add?
Sure. So
online can't see.
Oh, do I need to be down here? Okay, sorry. Hello, online. Okay, so for me, honesty is something I work on every day. If it goes in my mouth, it goes in a picture and it gets sent to my sponsors. If I'm starting to feel anyway weak, emotional, I talk to my sponsors about it. I talk to my higher power about it, because those can lead me down into making those bad choices. If I have any kind of issue, like when I was tempted to eat the pasta, first thing I did after I closed the cupboard door was go write a letter. It was on my phone. It wasn't, drafted out and typed or anything, but I wrote a letter and said, "This is what happened. This is what I did. This is how I was feeling, and this is what I'm learning." And then I think we talked the next day. But so rigorous honesty to me is just being willing to look at where I am, what I'm doing, what I'm eating, and how I'm feeling. Thank you.
So my kids have inspired me to rigorous honesty because long ago I actually learned this from my dad, who's really bad at this. He used to tell me when I was a kid that I should do what he said and not what he did. And I was a really smart kid, and I was like, that is dumb. That is not going to work. So as a parent, I want my kids to be honest with me. And in order for that to happen, I have to be rigorously honest with them. And so one of the things we can say to them is, have we ever lied to you? No, we have not. Even when it's hard, even when we have to tell them things that we don't want to tell them or that we know will hurt them, we say things with kindness, of course, but we are always very honest about it. And so as part of like starting recovery, I try to live the things in my family, what we live in recovery, because I know my kids are going to have a tendency to addiction. So I'm trying to, like preload some recovery. I don't know. Maybe it'll work. Who knows? At least I'll try. So every night we sit down as a family and we go around and we say how we've helped somebody, what we're grateful for that day, and one thing we could have done better. And it's really helped my kids' self-esteem in a lot of ways, which I didn't even realize they had self-esteem problems. I will put that out there. But they've really come to, and they've started to understand that like dad and I struggle with some big stuff sometimes. And that has been a big help, like just to have another person to tell it to. You may not be surrounded by teenagers who are so totally honest all the time, except when they don't want to be. But if there's somebody that you can just say, out loud, for me, like writing would work, but I find it easier to just say it, right? And just to speak it out loud and to just create that culture of honesty within our family.
Thank you so much. I'm Linda. I'm a compulsive overeater. It made me think of something that happened to me recently. The doctor told me I probably shouldn't have certain food item, and I kept going back to it and going back to it and going back to it. And finally, my sponsor says, I want you to write a letter to that food, a goodbye letter to that food. And I've never heard of that. I've been in program 30 years, never. And oh my gosh, it like turned my whole world upside down. It was a release. It wound up being like a love letter, because it was like I was romantically involved with this food island. I was like, holy cow, look at this letter. But so it kind of revealed to me how seriously I was emotionally attached to this food item. So you just keep coming back. You never know what you're going to hear and how it's going to help you to be able to go to the next level. It's on it. Okay, anybody have another question? We still have plenty of time.
First off, my God, am I proud of you three. You guys are amazing. I love you all three so much. My question, as someone has said up there, I grew up the fat kid, and as most fat kids, I was the funniest person in the room. It's all I had, my humor, and a lot of that came to depreciating humor. How do you remove a defect that is not necessary? How do you identify a defect versus a personality trait? I've realized that their depreciating humor is a defect, but how do I be funny if I'm not making fun of myself? So,
great question. Ooh, I dare you.
You might have noticed I like to get a laugh. So I've struggled with this as well, right? And what I have done is I actually spend a lot of time watching clean comics, and they're not generally self-deprecating, right? They'll talk about their personal life, they'll talk about different things, and they point out some of the kind of inconsistencies and different things like that, but they're not self-deprecating about themselves, because the defect is that I hurt myself before other people can hurt me. So I do not want to continue to hurt myself. End of story. Enough people are going to do that in my life. I'll deal with that, but I shouldn't be the first one to do it. You know, I should love myself, and I should say things about myself that are uplifting and wonderful. And I also don't want my kids to grow up thinking they need to hurt themselves in order to be funny, or in order to kind of do that before somebody else does. And so I've really, really worked hard on that, about being a little more careful about the way I talk about myself, especially my body. Right. Now, I'll talk about some other things, maybe my childhood, different things, like things that have happened to me, but I try not to make any comments about my body. My body has done a lot of good things for me. It has gifted me two of the most beautiful people I've ever met in my entire life. So I will never say a dirty word about it again.
I got humor. Okay, another question. Wow, you three, amazing. I would like to hear, became willing, to let God remove the character defects. Like, I would like to hear how your experience of each of you did that. Like consciously, I'll say I'm going to do it, and sometimes say it, but I don't feel it, and I know, act as if, but when it comes to that, sometimes it's hard to act as if. So I would just love your experience, strength, and hope, and turning a defect over to God. And also, I love what was just asked. How do you sometimes separate a defect from personality?
I think I don't I think if something's in the way, then that's making it a defect. But I'm not sure that, I mean, I don't, I'm not, I can't ch make all these changes myself. Anyway, that's important for me to say. So acting as if, I'm just becoming aware of what that is this year, acting as if. So when I became aware, particularly of codependency in my life, that's been at a root of people pleasing for me, wanting a external affirmation, trying to control people, places, things for my own agenda, not selfishly trying to do those things, wanting to need to be right, wanting to be beyond criticism, beyond not real. Those are not, those are ego. Those are ego things. And they were in the way of me having intimate relationships. So that makes them a defect for me. That makes codependency a defect for me. Is it always a defect? I don't know. I just know it is for me. And so I need to work on it. And so what did I do? I talked to my sponsor about it. And there was there was a book. Can't remember if my sponsor suggested the book to me. I think she might have. Somebody suggested the book to me, and I definitely think that might have been her. This particular, I can't, it's not OA proof, so I can't say what it is. And a sponsee brought another book into our conversations that we're reading together. So reading them together has been really helpful for me because I absorb things better and we get to talk about things. And the other person will say things that, the give and take, I get more out of that than I do out of what I would get out of it all by myself. And I'm reading it myself and I'm sharing it with the other person. So there's repetition there. And repetition is always good for me. So ultimately, this particular thing, it actually took me to another program, another 12-step program. OA is my core home program. And it just feels to me like, so I know lots of multi-program people in program. I just never was one. I was only OA. I was just single program. Now I'm a multi-program person, and it just feels like OA expanded. Like my program just expanded to include this additional work on this particular defect. So just can and how do I know what am I doing to first of all, it hadn't gone away. It hasn't gone away. I'm just keep coming back. Just like with the food, I keep coming back. I'm keep coming back. I'm trying to stretch myself by reading. I'm reading and writing, doing the little bit, it's just a little bit. I'm reading and doing writing every day on codependency and on step 6 and 7, every day, in addition to my regular other stuff. I do it before I do meditation at night. I at least have I that I will have done my writing. Even tonight. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. And I get a picture. I get the more I dig into it, the more I get a picture, an awareness of what it looks like, what codependency looked like for me in my life, how I'm acting it out, and what would recovery look like. Those things help. And I can act as if on the other stuff, and I keep surrendering it every single day and asking my higher power for healing. That's
Thank you, Pam. I'll be quick. I have a sponsor who requires me to regularly, and then other OA friends as well, who have required me regularly to look at myself and who I am, and make a list of my assets, and it's very hard for me to do because I've always been so shame-filled, but I am artistic, I am caring, et cetera. And so I look at my assets, and then for me, it's, are these category or character defects getting in the way of who I am and who I want to be? And with that, I can identify, okay, that's a defect. That's not who I am. It's not who I want to be. It's just something I'm doing that has helped me cope over the years, but doesn't work anymore. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Anyone else? We still have plenty of time. We still have 20 minutes.
You guys are fabulous. Who am I? I'm Andrea, compulsive overeater from Lubbock, Texas. My question is about control. Turning it over. I've been in program 2.5 years. I'm almost a 100-pounder. Except that I still want to drive the freaking bus. I do not know how to get out of the driver's seat, and I want to. I am desperate. to learn how to give up that false sense of control. And I'm just curious how you, I mean, I can just say, okay, God, here, take it. But I don't believe it. So how did you learn to believe it besides acting as if? Because I'm desperate for more than what I have now. So thank you.
Wow. And my watch is wrong, so we only have 5 minutes.
I'll be quick. So early on in program, I struggled with this too. I'm a control freak. I'd really like to know exactly what everyone's doing today. Please send me your agendas. Thank you so much. So I would visualize myself, like I lay in bed. This is where I get control freaky the most, is when I'm laying in bed. And so I'd start thinking about this thing or that thing or whatever. And I'd try to, okay, how can I manipulate it to do this? So I would visualize myself taking that thing, it's like on a piece of paper, and tossing it up to God. He had a basketball goal or a trash can, whatever. And it would land in there and he would keep it. And then I would feel myself doing it again. Like, oh, sorry, I took it back. Do it again. Like I repeated this visualization over and over and over and over again until I fell asleep. And I did it every night for probably a year. Now, your version of that may look totally different. You may not have been a basketball player when you were in seventh and eighth grade, and that's okay. but for me, that visualization was really a big piece of it. And I still have to remind myself today, you know, control is an illusion. So I think I'm driving the bus, but here's the thing. I'm not. I'm in the very back seat, and there's no one driving if God's not driving.
Thank you so much. Any burning desires? Thank you, thank you, thank you. One real quick.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to ask you, with, you know, doing your program and like navigating your food plan and all of that. How do you do that?
So my food plan is 3 meals a day, 1 protein snack, and no sugar. I do not send my food to my sponsor. She said I can if I want to, but I don't have to, and I haven't needed that. When I sit down, I make sure that I have a protein, a reasonably sized amount of carbs, a lot of vegetables, and a fruit. And if I don't have to have that snack, if I feel myself getting hungry during the day, because sometimes that happens, I check and say, okay, first of all, am I really hungry? Or am I just emotionally hungry? And then if I am really hungry, I'll have a protein snack and that's it. Because I know what my body needs. And I've done so many diets. I know what a reasonable amount of food looks like. Like, I just didn't want to do that. I wanted to eat what the restaurant serving was and not the actual serving. And then I pray every time before I sit down to eat. And I am a Christian, so I fall back on the Lord's Prayer and I say, God, give me my daily bread. That's all I get for today. I don't get tomorrow's daily bread or next week's daily bread. I just get today. So that has worked for me. Like I know, and I've done the like weighing and measuring and the counting of calories and the exact amount. And it's not functional for me today. And so this was kind of our way of saying, I need something. I need boundaries. Obviously I can't just be allowed to eat whatever I want. That's not working. That's what brought me here. but I had to have loose boundaries. It's like within this fence, I'm good, but I just needed the one big fence. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
All right, let's close with the OOA promise. Let's circle up.